Anybody out there like to do big things? Anybody out there feel like your life is so full that sometimes you can barely think? Anybody out there wonder if there's a better way? Yeah, me too. In this much belated episode, I'm asking big questions about how much work is enough and how to make that happen in an ambitious life. You're on the I Heart This train, my friends. Let's talk about what we love. I've been thinking about John McPhee lately. In case you don't know, he is one of the most venerated American essayists. Pulitzer Prize, National Book Award nominations, staff writer at The New Yorker for like half a century. Widely considered the master of long-form literary nonfiction. In the summer of 1966, John was deep in one of the biggest writing projects of his early career, a book-length essay on the New Jersey Pine Barrens. It had taken 8 months to finish the research. Just the research. It was, as he put it, enough research to fill a silo. And then, daunted by this immensity, he spent 2 weeks lying on a picnic table in his backyard, staring into the branches of an ash tree, wondering how the hell he was going to turn it into a coherent essay. What strikes me about this story isn't the fact that a great writer got writer's block, or the fact that after 2 weeks, 2 weeks, he had an epiphany that led to one of the greatest American essays of the 20th century. What strikes me is that he stayed on the picnic table, waiting and thinking and thinking and waiting without succumbing to the impulse to rush over to the typewriter and get busy. I've been thinking about John McPhee because I've been having my own picnic table moment, overwhelmed by the scale of what I've committed to, both in this podcast and in the rest of my life. Regular listeners will know that since February of this year, I have been writing, revising, recording, editing, and producing an episode of I Heart This every single week. What you may not know is that I'm also trying to revise a novel, outline another, organize a public event in November that is so big we had to rent a theater. Other projects have been languishing on the back burner, including a couple of art science performance pieces and a new YouTube channel. Thankfully, I have just finished installing heat pumps in my house, so now at least that's off the table. But like everyone else, I've got all the everyday responsibilities of keeping my house from falling apart, and caring for my family and friends, and getting regular exercise and enough sleep, doing my part to counteract the consolidation of power by an authoritarian president, and oh yeah, I've also got a job. Look, I know I'm not alone in this. Overwhelm is as common as dirt. But like with grief and falling in love, just because something is commonplace doesn't make it any more manageable when it's happening to you. My overwhelm caught up with me last Wednesday night as I was trying to finish this episode before my midnight deadline. I had a 1,700-word draft, and I might have recorded it, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And the maelstrom of everything I was doing, I had thrown together a slapdash essay with a tepid conclusion about balance that I didn't really believe in. It was, as Laura said, just okay. And she was right. And I knew it. With my deadline just hours away, nothing could save my draft. There was no time to lie on the picnic table. That story about John McPhee raised questions that no doubt you've wrestled with too in your life. How much work do you want to do? And at what pace? And how much is too much? And how much latitude do we give ourselves to rest and think and dream? Our answers to these questions affect the quality of our lives, but also the quality of our work. There is a voice in my heart. I'll call it the dynamo. And it has a lot to say about this. The dynamo wants to accomplish great things, to write poems and podcasts and science lessons that would make your jaw drop. It wants to make beauty the world has never seen. It cites over a century of research. What, the voices in your heart don't do citations? Well, that's funny. Mine always do. Anyway, the research is convincing. People who make immortal works of art and history-changing discoveries are invariably people who just make a shit ton of things. They're not afraid to work and to sacrifice. Because apparently, quality is a consequence of quantity. Now, partly this is just the law of large numbers. If you write 100 books, you have a much better chance that one of them will delight your readers than if you just write 2 or 3. But partly it's about honing your craft. The Beatles played 7-hour sets at dives in Hamburg's red light district for nearly 2.5 years. It was grueling. But when they returned to Liverpool, they had an encyclopedic repertoire, and they were masters at commanding an audience's attention. Or how about the Vlogbrothers making 2 video essays a week since the beginning of YouTube? As the Nobel-winning chemist Linus Pauling said about his Secrets to Scientific Insight, well, you just have lots of ideas, and throw away the bad ones. It was with this in mind last February that I committed to the 1 episode per week pace. A pace that sharpened my eye for good stories and helped me experiment with a whole variety of structures and forced me to very quickly cut to the emotional core of an idea. But there's another voice in my heart that vociferously argues against the dynamo. Let's call it the monk. And the monk says, life isn't about what you do, Ben. It is about who you're going to be. And all this doing will get in the way of being. And as far as the monk is concerned, how much work do I want to do and at what pace are the wrong questions? And the monk makes convincing points. One is that the logical consequence of quality is a function of quantity is workaholism. I mean, Danielle Steele might be the 4th best-selling fiction author of all time because she's written about 200 books. But do you really want to be like her? Chained to her computer every day from dawn till dusk, skipping holidays and subsisting on toast? I mean, seriously, because that's how she does it, even though she's like 70-something now. And my answer is definitely no. I'd rather give up writing altogether. But the monk says, this isn't just about quality of life. It's also about the quality of your work. Because filling your life up with activity erodes your ability to do any of it well. Not only does it dilute your effort, but the psychic load of tracking so many projects clouds your concentration. You get overloaded. Exactly like I did on Wednesday night. For the monk, doing more eventually gets in the way of the work itself. Like the rock star, who instead of glorying in the living dream of his first world tour, gets sullen and grouchy at journalists and fans alike because the pace of it is grueling, the performances never stop, and he has no space to do the thing he loves most, which is to actually write music. In my life, I have loved both the monk and the dynamo. When I was a kid, my greatest hero was John Muir, the vagabond poet of wild places. Like him, I ached to wander, free and aimless, through the wild. And in my own small way, I did. In my 20s, I spent whole days sitting in the woods, watching birds and tracking bears, while my peers were out starting careers. Sometimes I'd just study the lichens on an old stump for an hour. Sometimes I would just let my attention drift from leaf to cloud to sky. I didn't write much in those days. Maybe an occasional poem, but only when the words bubbled up and spilled over and I couldn't contain them anymore. It wasn't a practice, it was a reflex. But some of those poems are among my life's best. I dare not revise a word lest I disturb their perfection. My 30s were different. I learned to chase dreams with passion, to push myself through the last miles of a marathon and find that I could do it after all. I worked all day at school and wrote with the discipline of a soldier after the kids were finally asleep, only to discover one Christmas Eve, almost exactly at midnight, that I, me, Ben Lord, had finished a novel. I will never forget the profound joy that settled over me that night. I didn't always love the intensity of the work, but I often did. And I also loved the fruits of the labor, carefully crafted lessons that made students literally gasp with understanding, or having my writing noticed by magazines who offered to pay me to do more of it. Being invited to work as a consultant for school districts across the country. In my 20s, I'd been embarrassed about my ambitions. In my 30s, I loved them, unashamed. If I was forced to pick between the monk and the dynamo, I don't know which I would choose. I know in my bones that both lead to beautiful work and a beautiful life. And so I ended up last Wednesday night filling my life with activity while simultaneously expecting the insight that comes from quiet reflection, because I was trying to do all the things and still have time to reflect. Monk or dynamo? I was trying not to choose. So by the time Friday morning came around, I'd written my way through another aborted draft. My episode was a day and a half overdue. In trying to sacrifice nothing, I'd given up both the joys of the dynamo and the joys of the monk. And as I stood in the shower that morning, it occurred to me, there was no way out. I could write an episode every week, or I could write episodes I was proud of every time, but I couldn't have both. Choice was non-negotiable. The monk would call this the wisdom of no escape. A 10-minute drive from where I live is a house called Naulaka. It's the house where Rudyard Kipling lived when he wrote The Jungle Book. Kipling's time at Naulaka was one of the most productive of his life, but he only wrote for 4 hours a day. Ben Franklin was an inveterate workaholic. I think he would have fit right into today's hustle culture. But the work that made him a household name, both in his time and ours, only happened after he gave up on aggressively growing his printing business and turned its management over to a partner. This 18th century style early retirement was the thing that gave him the latitude to experiment with the little understood phenomenon of electricity. Einstein took a job as a patent clerk, he said, because it was easy. He could get his work done in a few hours and spend the rest of his workday daydreaming about what it would be like to sit side saddle on a beam of light. Daydreams that changed the nature of reality itself. Virginia Woolf, Charles Darwin, Alice Munro, Stephen King, Charles Dickens, Henri Poincaré, Igor Stravinsky, Jean-Paul Sartre, the list of visionaries who changed the course of history and art, on 3 or 4 hours of focused work each day is really long. These people were all undoubtedly dynamos, pouring themselves into great work that they knew mattered, but they were also monks because they knew that stepping back was crucial. They knew that lying on their backs on the picnic table was actually part of the hustle. I think I imagined that having a balance between the monk and the dynamo would bring a sense of ease. But for many of these heroes, that wasn't the case. There was no resolution to the tension between the monk and the dynamo. I mean, John McPhee felt it particularly acutely. Anyone who has stepped on a tightrope can tell you that balance is a dynamic thing. It's made of these constant, tiny adjustments. And the more daring the tightrope we walk, the harder the adjustments become. But perhaps it is in the tension itself where the genius resides. You push yourself through a silo full of research, and then there's too much of it, and the problem becomes intractable. And all you can do is wait for a structure to reveal itself. No one can tell you when to get up from the table and write. And no one can tell you when to put down the pen and go for a walk. If you want to do the great work, and in my life that is one of the things that I dearly want to do, then you've got to walk the tightrope, readjusting between the dynamo and the monk with every step. Because in the end, doing and being can't be separated. We can't do without being someone. We can't be without doing something. Do be, do be. Do be, do be, do. Look, I fell off the tightrope this week. There was too much dynamo and not enough monk, and it compromised both the quality of my work and the quality of my life. But it wasn't so bad. I had a good net. I learned a few things. So here I am, getting back on the tightrope, with a new voice in my heart. Maybe it's the voice of John McPhee, reminding me that our work and our lives have rhythms, fast then slow, then fast again. Right now, I've got to slow down, so I've decided to step back from weekly episodes. Perhaps I'll write every other week for a while. And in November, iHeartThis's third season will come to an end. And then, I don't know, maybe I'll come back for a fourth season in February. Maybe I'll turn instead to some of those projects languishing on my desk. Maybe, like poetry did in my 20s, I'll just wait until the iHeartThis episodes bubble up from within on their own syncopated schedule. It's been a long run, and I'm proud of the work that I've done here. But maybe it's time for something new. This weekend, I'm going on a writer's retreat by the coast. I'll walk in the woods, watch some birds, track some bears. And when I come back, I think I'll lie down on my own backyard picnic table beneath the branches of a Norway maple and wait until I know for sure. Thanks for listening, everyone, and for your patience with this episode. I hope it was worth the wait. I was reminded of John McPhee's picnic table moment by Cal Newport, who talks about it in his book Slow Productivity. It's been a bit of an inspiration to help me balance the dynamo and the monk. I highly recommend it, which along with my other sources can be found in the show notes. If today's episode got you thinking about your own picnic table moments, I'd love to hear about it. Leave me a note at ben@iheartthispodcast.com. And if you found something useful here, I'd be grateful if you shared this episode with a friend. Until next time, doobie-doobie-doo. iHeartThis is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Bryony Morrow Cribbs. Our website is iheartthispodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, be kind, be curious, and be thankful.